Hey everybody, welcome to Seneca Lake Mysteries, the podcast where we explore the unusual, strange, and unexplained on New York's largest Finger Lake. Now for this episode, I had the opportunity to speak with a very special guest, and we get into some really thought-provoking, mind-bending, mystical stuff. But first, I have a couple other things I wanted to share with you guys. I'm recording this right now on July 6th, and earlier today, I had quite an adventure up on Connecticut Hill near the hamlet of Alpine, which is about 7 to 8 miles south of Watkins Glen. Now, the location is sometimes called the Alpine Portal because of the large number of reports of paranormal activity there, from ghosts to disembodied voices to orbs and UFOs to electronic or vehicle failures and even some Bigfoot reports. Now, I hadn't planned to discuss Connecticut Hill on this podcast initially due to it being a little bit further away from the lake and the area that I've been concentrating on, but due to the frequent requests I'm getting from you all telling me to check it out and the fact that it is connected to Seneca Lake via the watershed, I decided to keep it on my radar and to do an episode on the Alpine Portal in the near future. Now, I don't want to give away the whole story of my visit to Connecticut Hill today, but I'll give you a little preview. So, a few weeks back, I was contacted by a guy named Rick, who lives in Alpine, and heard episodes 5 and 6 of the podcast, which prompted him to email me. He's been hunting on Connecticut Hill for years and has a pretty intimate knowledge of the terrain in that area. He told me that he found something very intriguing and mysterious in the middle of the woods in an area that's somewhat difficult to traverse and a good distance from the established paths of the Finger Lakes Trail system. So Rick offered to bring me there and I immediately accepted. So I headed down to Alpine this morning, met up with Rick, and we made our way into the woods. And again, you'll hear the full story in a future episode, but I will say that what we found was far more intriguing and mysterious than I had hoped for. Totally unexpected. Rick also filled me in on some other stories about the place that were pretty crazy too. So that's all I'm going to say for now, and I can't wait to tell you guys the whole story. Now also, before we get to the guest, I wanted to give a shout out to a local business called Total Recall. Now, Total Recall is at 40 Castle Street in Geneva, and the owner, Cassie, has been a huge supporter of the podcast even before it was launched. You can find Seneca Lake Monster stickers in the store from Seneca Lake Mysteries, along with some small promotional cards for the podcast that she's been handing out to everyone who comes in, maybe whether they want it or not, I'm not sure, but she's out there championing the podcast, and I really appreciate it. Now, the shop itself, it's really cool. The front door entrance has the following on the window. It reads, Geneva Society for Cryptid Sightings and Hauntings. Now, this isn't an actual organization, at least not yet, but when you walk in, you'll enter what was designed to look like a paranormal office frozen in time. Now, I don't want to spoil too much, but the Seneca Lake Monster absolutely has a presence in that space. But it gets even a little weirder when you see the bookcase on the back wall actually slides to reveal the rest of the shop. And once you go into the shop, there's a huge variety of nostalgic and vintage, quirky, weird items from clothing to toys and beyond in the front part of the shop. It'll take a while to see everything, and once you're done there, you head back to the jungle room, which is a hangout area with wild offbeat art and a jungle theme to it. And if you keep moving, you'll enter an old school arcade with pinball and video games, and you can play unlimited games for one price. Then next up, you go through another door and there's a board game room where you can dig into the huge collection of board games they have on the shelves there. And even the bathroom in this place was painstakingly decorated. No spoilers again, but you even gotta see the bathroom when you get in there. So again, Total Recall is at 40 Castle Street in Geneva, and you can find them on Instagram at Total Recall 315. So if you're in Geneva or you need a reason to go to Geneva, make sure to stop in, look around at Total Recall and tell Cassie and or Josh that I sent you. And finally, let me introduce my guest. A few weeks back after Soraya and I had talked about ley lines and earth energies on episode 6 of the podcast, I wanted to refresh my memory on the topic. About 25 years ago, I had a strong interest in geomancy or earth magic, but hadn't really studied it in years since then. Now, earth magic is described as the art of understanding, interpreting, and harnessing the earth's energy for transformation, healing, and spiritual growth, including the use of maps to identify geographic features and patterns to gain insights into our connection to the planet. So I was looking for info, and I came across a website of a guy named Dan Shaw, who is also known as the Vortex Detective. So I spent some time reviewing the massive amount of information on the site, and I decided to buy a couple of Dan's ebooks. So he replied, he sent me the ebooks, plus, I don't know if he wants me to tell you this, but plus other ebooks that he's written on the topic, and then generously offered to be a guest on the podcast. So of course I said yes, not only because I wanted to reacquaint myself with the mystical practice of visionary map reading, but I was also curious to hear Dan's take on how Seneca Lake fits into this art or practice. Now, I just mentioned Dan's generosity, and I know I mentioned it during our conversation that you'll hear in a second here as well, but I'll say again that from all my interactions with him, he's been incredibly kind, positive, and willing to share everything he's learned over the last nearly 40 years with the art of earth magic. So when he says he responds to every phone call and email, he means it. Geomancy is something that can be learned by anyone with an understanding of some of the basic principles. And it's quite obvious that Dan is not motivated by profit like some people who specialize in esoteric or mystical practices. Now, if you want Dan to do the work and create a custom map for your area, something that'll take him time to research and prepare, there'd be a fee. But if you're looking for everything, everything you need to know to start exploring earth magic and geomancy on your own, it's all there for free on his website. Now, the website is vortexmaps.com. So if you want that information, it's right there to look for it. And yeah, if you have any questions about the subject, just ask Dan. I'll give you a quick summary of Dan's credits as well. Dan Shaw has been a student of alchemy since 1986 and began working with the science behind earth magic, geomancy, in 1991. He researches, appears on national media, authors books, leads tours, and does work for private clients. His TV and film appearances include Brad Meltzer's Decoded, Devil's Triangle, Alaska, on the History Channel, Mysteries of the National Parks, Yosemite, on the Travel Channel, and the documentary Ancient Tomorrow. Dan also consults for TV shows, including NBC's The Blacklist. So thanks again for listening. And now let's get into the conversation with the Vortex Detective, Dan Shaw. All right, everyone. I'm here with the Vortex Detective, Dan Shaw. This is, we've exchanged some emails, but this is the first time we're actually talking to each other. So I'll be getting to know Dan and his work along with all of you. Dan, thanks so much for doing the show and welcome to Seneca Lake Mysteries.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. So let's go way back as far back as you want to go. You're a student and a teacher of geomancy, earth magic. So I want to know your origin story. Like, how did you first become interested in these subjects? And how did this become your life's work?
Sure, but you said we only had 40 minutes to an hour. In brief, I was invited to be part of a group in Austin, Texas in about 1986. And that group was guided in part, in large part, by a channel descended master. And so I was studying ascension back in 1986 and 1987 in Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. And so some 4 years later or so, 1990, I got introduced to a map showing the Grand Tetons as the center of this circle, vast circle of 19 mountains and bodies of water, one of which included Mount Shasta. And I was in Mount Shasta at the time, and another point on that circle, Lake Tahoe. So you could pull out a map at the right size there and draw that circle yourself, knowing that, put a compass of the type for drawing circles at the center of at the Grand Tetons, and you can see that each one of those mountains and bodies of water forms a nearly perfect circle of 19 points, each one largest mountain body of water in its region. And I saw that as the landscape itself, but also the map as a powerful alchemical tool. And it happened that Dorothy Leon was the person who had created this map. She'd included it in a book where she'd written it under a pen name. I didn't know her by that name, but through just a miraculous turn of events, somebody recommended Dorothy to me after I'd been on a pilgrimage based on her map. She contacted me and asked me to publish a book she was writing. I was not prepared to do that, but I asked if I could publish her map. And so I was off publishing not just Dorothy's wheel with 19 spokes around the Grand Tetons, but also another map, which is of some renown, which is called the Becker-Hagens, or the Earth Star Globe. And that shows the so-called Earth grid. That one's been around since the 80s and has been featured in a lot of books, and people are pretty well familiar with that. And I had the good fortune of being able to publish that at about the same time, the early 90s. I reprinted that, and so I was off and running in my study of geomancy, earth magic.
Okay. Yeah, that's it prompts memories that I have when I first started learning about the subject. And I don't have as specific a memory, but I remember seeing maps and seeing, geometric patterns overlaid on maps of the Earth, and how they fit. I was like, what does this even mean? Like, how is this? This can't be just a coincidence, and this can't be just wishful thinking.
I'm just so excited. I got so many questions for you.
You just jumped right to the very end, which is what is the meaning? And
right.
And wait till I tell you about your location there and how that just fits onto the planetary grid so beautifully. I mean, let's put off what does it mean for just a second.
Okay. Yes.
And go. Yeah. And let's say this. Everything in creation seems to have a geometry to it, and some visionaries can recognize that geometry at the scale of the entire planet. It does appear that at the geometric points, the points which form the so-called platonic solids, the geometric solids, the icosahedron, dodecahedron, tetrahedron, octahedron, the cube, that these platonic solids, when you inscribe them in the earth, that the geometric points turn out to have certain geologic significance, or they're marked with ancient monuments, ancient prehistoric civilizations. And so there's this bizarre geometry that occurs on a planetary scale, and it's bizarre, but it's natural. And we see it in the location of the Hawaiian Islands, that right at the 19.47, which is the point where a tetrahedron would touch the surface of the globe in an ideal model. We can inscribe these geometries into the earth, and it turns out to be a fantastically useful model. And it goes back to this author named Ivan Sanderson, and through some Russian researchers, and then popularized by Bill Becker and Beth Hagens, and they published this world map that folds up to a globe and shows this geometry of the icosahedron, the dodecahedron. So that's kind of the best-known model. Those two geometric shapes are dual solids. They nest inside each other. One has faces where the other has points. So the icosahedron there, it's got those triangular sides, and the dodecahedron, it's got the pentagonal sides, and these just nest perfectly. And turns out your location there, there's this line that's going straight through between Seneca Lake and Cayuga Lake, if I've got that right, and it's just right dead. I mean, it is on that line. It's within miles of this global grid line. And when I say within miles, these global patterns, when we're talking about lines, we're not talking about like a pencil thin line on a map. We're talking about this undulating spiral, perhaps, of energy. The line, the geometric lines, you know, it's a good model, goes, it's useful, and it's very useful, but you want to think of these lines, these edges of these geometric solids as like living, conscious, divine things, and they're expanding and contracting and responding to our presence. And so your location there, bam, it's just right on one of these global grid lines. So as I look at it, just take a, I just found out about you a few days ago. I didn't have a lot of time to look at your location there, but bam, there it is, right on that global grid line. Now, this segment of line that we're talking about, it's 2,200 miles long. And I'm looking at your location, I'm thinking, by God, that's just like exactly halfway between the two global grid points. And I go and measure it out in Google Earth, and sure enough, it's 1,100 miles in either direction. And as I mentioned, there's these, so you're like smack the center there, like you could say at a harmonic node, right between the, on that line that passes between the two Finger Lakes there. And then furthermore, there's these other geometric solids that nest inside as well. The cube, there's a number of ways of nesting the cube inside of the sphere or the earth. And so some of those cube lines, turns out, those cross at that precise point there. And then there's the icosahedron, and that one, there's three ways you can nest that one, and those lines cross right there as well. So you get this like what I want to say, sunburst of energy lines coming out right between those two Finger Lakes.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, that's that's good stuff. I thought we were going to get to that to the end, but we're getting to it soon enough. Let me see here. So when you talk about these different there's different grids that have been mapped that people have created, you know, ley line maps or whatever you want to call them around the world.
Many of them.
Yes. So is it a, I'm just curious about how so many different people, and there's so many different people who've looked at the same maps, and they come up with these, you know, different beautiful geometries and designs and patterns. How does that work?
A couple of different levels for sure. And one is that, as I said, everything in creation has a geometry to it. The shape has energy, and energy has shape. You've heard of pyramid power. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So shape has energy, and There's also a wonderful book called Shape Power. But energy also has shape. So we're recognizing this at this planetary scale, and we're saying, okay, well, there's this. We can recognize these, what we'll call vortex markers, at these certain geometric points around the globe, the Bermuda Triangle, and et cetera, and Seneca Lake, apparently. And so we can, I don't pretend to understand everything about vortexes. I can't, you know, shake the mystery out of it, so to speak. But I take a very geophysical approach to the subject. And so I start with what I think of as being the Occam's razor, the simplest explanation, which is the electromagnetism. And so I take a very geophysical approach, and other researchers will all approach the field from different angles. But I like to think that what I'm doing is the science behind earth magic. So it does turn out that electromagnetism is a very rich field to mine for clues to how places might affect us. And I'm in the field because I'm interested in the alchemy and the personal and planetary ascension, and using these earth energies as a way of transforming ourselves, our consciousness, and our physiology. So the idea is that there's no separation between ourselves and this energy ocean in which we swim. And as we move through it and through time, through the cycles of time, that we're awash in these electromagnetic energies, for better or for worse, but that we can be aware of them, and we can maybe mitigate certain negative natural and man-made energies, and then we can take advantage of those things as well for our own physical healing, our psychic opening, and for harmonizing the planet. So then, now we've jumped to the end, and what is the meaning? Meaning, and it's hopefully to understand how the universe is put together so that we can actually use it to our benefit, so we can use it towards our ascension and our perfection. And so there's this connection, I believe, and I think I can support the premise that the places make us feel things on a physical level and on an energetic level. And there are places that contribute to and enhance our paranormal abilities, and our paranormal experiences might cluster around these areas. And that's your whole premise there. So I think I would 100% support your thesis there, that there's something about your place, and it's maybe it's 80% electromagnetic, or maybe it's 20% electromagnetic, because there's all these other elements of, you know, all the way down the spectrum of energies up the spectrum of energies to consciousness and intention and magic.
Right. Yep. And yeah, just to step back a little bit, you mentioned the word vortex. Now, the word vortex in popular culture, you know, conjures images of, you know, a portal to another dimension, or a place where paranormal events are common. Can you take us through like the basics of what a vortex is?
Sure. Well, there's, you know, I use the term in a pretty particular way. We've talked about these global energy patterns, and you didn't know that there's almost an infinite number of different energy patterns, as many as there are researchers, more certainly. And so that where we, on the global scale, we're picturing these rings of energy like equators, great circles of energy that wrap the earth like violin strings, like a ball of twine, that are vibrating at a certain frequency, and those interact and create different types of energies. And so just in kind of loose parlance, you'd say that a vortex is where these energy lines cross. What happens when you drop two pebbles in a pond and there's these expanding ripples, is that where those ripples interact, there's a kind of an interference. And there's actually two kinds of interference. There's constructive and destructive interference, where these energies come together. And so that gives you actually three different kinds of patterns there. You get the null zone, the zero, and then you get the positive number and the negative number, depending on how those waves are interacting. So that's the acoustic model turns out to be a really useful model for understanding how the energies of place may be affecting us. There's acoustic energies, certainly, and there's seismic energies, earthquake energies and such. And then there's the electrical energies in the atmosphere and according to our elevation. So from my standpoint, I'm just looking at every possible contributor to the electromagnetic field in which we swim, and also all those other elements that could potentially contribute to what we've described as, you know, a supporting paranormal experience.
Okay. Yeah. It's all very mind-bending stuff. So these places, well, first, so vortexes from your standpoint, are there, you know, I would imagine that there are different types of them. There are different levels. Like there might be one place that has, you know, a certain level of energies, and then other places where it's much more powerful. Is that mm-hmm. accurate?
Mm-hmm. Sure. There's many different nuances in the kinds of energies that you're going to experience as you move around mostly the surface, but also you might go into a cave or, you know, chasm or something like that. So as you're moving around, as you're swimming in this churning sea of electromagnetism, again, to kind of oversimplify, you're exposing yourself, your cells are all operating on these very minute electrical differentials and such. So you're exposing your physiology and your consciousness to these different energies, as both as you move around and over these time cycles. And there's every reason to believe that humans actually do have the potential for magnetic sense, because we've got magnetite in our mm-hmm. brain, in every cell of our brain, in our larger concentration in our sinuses. So like other species, we could potentially have this magnetic sense and not just be like, oh, that's north, but actually be subtly and profoundly influenced by these energies all around us. So the premise then is that at certain points, maybe it's geometric points, again, oversimplifying, mm-hmm. but at certain points that we are sensitive, we feel these energies, whether it's a summit or whether it's maybe an alignment of points or a point in a geometric pattern, maybe an equilateral triangle or something. We may have an experience, and it may be chills, you know, or the hair standing up on the back of your neck, or you may experience like a little electrical charge or change in temperature. I think it's different for everyone, but we can become more aware that these energies may be coming from the place itself. It may be some spirit or ghost or some other source, but mm-hmm. one plausible explanation is that we're actually feeling an energy from the place, and so we can attune ourselves to that and through dowsing and other means learn to be more sensitive to these energies and then to manipulate them. And that might be like through feng shui type of work, or it might be through more like building monuments and placing stones and that kind of thing.
Sure. And in these places, I mean, I'm curious about in a lot of these places, you'll find, you know, whether it's, you know, pyramids or stone piles and everything in between, you'll find ancient remnants of civilizations and people who seem to want to mark very important places on the earth. But also, you'll often see, I mean, Washington, D.C. is the perfect example. I mean, that's just one giant occult complex. I mean, with the founding fathers of our country were very, uh-huh. were uh-huh. very, very, might even say obsessed with these energies and sacred geometry and all of this. Do you think that are the, you know, so let's say there's a place and there's an old church that was built there. Do you think these places were built by people who understood who really had a deep understanding of these energies and how they interact and what they, how they affect us. And they chose to put these places in these, put these, you know, structures in these places, mm-hmm. or is it also maybe a subconscious thing where they just kind of felt like, oh, this is the place to put this.
I think you have to see to the proposition that there's these highly advanced ancient civilizations, and that they were advanced not only technologically, but also in these, you might call today, what we think of as esoteric arts, and the geomancy or the earth magic that the masons are using, and their placement of monuments and the proportions and angles and all these things. It's demonstrable by the ancient monuments, yeah, that they were well aware of all these things, and the speed of light and the function, you know, the pi ratio, and all these things are embedded in these ancient monuments. So, you know, I think that argument is already been decided. So sure. The idea is that these ancient monuments, not only were they placed at energetic locations, but they were built with energetic materials and built with an energetic geometry and built with ceremony, and that they were built to manipulate, at least manipulate the energies of the place, if not also the energies of the people and consciousness around them.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully for better, but, you know, for better or worse. Oh,
yeah. Sure. Which kind of reminds me of when you're talking about for worse, there's a place here in between Seneca Lake and Cayuga Lake, formerly known as the Seneca Army Depot. And mm-hmm. that was built... It was the building was completed like weeks before World War II began. World War II was on the horizon, so it was decided that there needed to be these weapons storage facilities in the four corners of the continental U.S. And in this corner, it ended up being right there between Seneca Lake and Cayuga Lake. There were 150 farm families that were displaced. The government found this area, 11,000 acres, and it was perfect because for their needs, because there were railroad lines, two railroad lines running through the area. But also they chose it because there was shale bedrock underneath the ground in some places, you know, within 8 inches of the surface of the topsoil. And when they put in these big concrete igloos to store the weapons, the idea was if there were accidental explosions of these weapons, the bedrock underneath would make the explosion go straight up rather than side to side and explode more of the weapons. But I've always... that the Seneca Army Depot ended up it was opened right before World War II. It closed right after the first Gulf War. They supplied weapons for every single U.S. military action around the world for all of those decades. They had one of the main nuclear weapons storage facilities was also built there in the late 50s. So it was a place. I mean, for the people who live around here, it can be a little complicated as far as people's feelings about it, because it was a big part of the community. A lot of people worked there, the non-commissioned officers and you know, civilian employees. It was huge for the local economy, and it was an important part of people's lives. At the same time, this is, you know, it was this factory for, you know, war and destruction and suffering around the world for decades. And some people say that maybe the majority of the weapons and supplies, whether it's vehicles, uniforms, everything, came through Seneca Army Depot. And now it's, of course, closed. But it also has a population of white deer in 1949, an officer on the property saw these a male and a female pure white fur, white-tailed deer, and the commanding officer told everyone that no one was allowed to kill these deer. So this population of these beautiful white deer ended up living within this fenced-in area during the time the Army Depot was in use. And then after it closed, they still are there. And now the Army Depot has been taken over by private entities who have a museum there. So it's a museum to the Army Depot, but it's also, they also have white deer tours. You can go there and see the white deer. So it's a really unique place with a remarkable history. And I'm curious what you think about like this, is this, I mean, I see this as an example of whether consciously or subconsciously, this location being chosen and maybe the energy of this area being manipulated and used in a way that was ultimately very destructive.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely researchers have made the argument that parts of the Earth grid have been militarized. You do see a lot of correspondence between nuclear materials, government installations, and grid points. And another, what I would call a vortex marker, is unusual plant and animal species. So there's this flowchart that goes from where you have unique, where you have ore and mineral deposits, that'll affect the electromagnetic field. You'll have unique soil types, and that'll lead to unique plant and animal species. So you often find at these energetic points that the landscape is lush, the landscape has been preserved as some kind of a park, or sometimes that there's military government bases. And nuclear materials, storage and processing and such. So, there's an author named Bruce Cathy, who's a New Zealand pilot, who wrote a number of books on this thesis that there's an intimate and an essential relationship between an Earth grid of his and nuclear materials and nuclear detonations. So I'm not the first person to suggest that connection.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. And like I mentioned, it's now called Deerhaven Park, and it's also, I mean, to me, it's kind of a beautiful transition. Is that now it's a wildlife preserve. You know, they're doing a lot. There's still areas that are contaminated from the depot being there for so long. They also had live ammunition training areas there, but it's a really beautiful and interesting turnaround to where what this place is today. And also I mean also there is something very, very primal, I don't know how to say it, when you see one of these deer. I mean, it's not like a zoo, you know, they take you for tours through there, and you might see one, you might not. But when you see one of these deer, even though they're, you know, they're captive, even though you kind of expect that you're going to see them, at least for me, every time I see them, I kind of have to catch my breath. It's just something so gorgeous, about these. And then of course, you know, there's so many, traditions and stories and folklore around the world, spiritual traditions for all different kinds of people, and through time who have white deer as a sacred animal, yes, or a sacred symbol.
So the plants and the animals are sensitive to parts of the electromagnetic spectrum that we cannot perceive. So watching the plants and animals is a great way to actually observe the earth energies and the unseen energies. And we often find, again, not just unique plant animal species, but that the plants are growing in particularly sometimes lush and sometimes unusual ways. So you might find trees that are spiraling in strange ways, or they're branching out more nodes than they usually do, or could be animals building nests in unusual ways. And you can actually see the game trails on the ground following the energy lines.
Oh, right, right. What was I going to say? So let's go. Well, actually, before we go back to that, did you happen to see the, and this is, I don't know how this is connected, but did you happen to see the photo I posted on my website, of these indentations that were found in the bottom of Seneca Lake?
I did see those. I didn't know what to make of them at all.
Yeah, that was going to be my questions. What do you what do you make of those? Because the researchers have no idea. It's really fascinating to me that there's so many of them, and some of them are, and many of them look almost perfectly round. One of my listeners suggested maybe they were plunge pools. Maybe at one time there were waterfalls, like multiple waterfalls falling into the area and created a bunch of plunge pools, but I don't know. I know that you have at least some background in geology.
I have a degree in geography, so a little background in geology, and just not nearly enough time to look at the Seneca Lakes. But from my standpoint, from how energies vary from place to place, anywhere where you've had glaciation is going to present all kinds of interesting energetic features. So the Finger Lakes themselves, as you traverse, let's say you get on a boat and you go across the lake, and you know you have a sense of how that feels in your body when you get out on that lake, and you know it's just like everything changes when you're out on that body of water. And how much of that is attributable to just the pure electromagnetic field of being out on the water, I don't know, you be the judge. You know, we're all sensitive in different ways. But then you've got the glaciers have basically scoured to bedrock, as you said a little bit earlier, and you can actually get maps of depth to bedrock. And from my standpoint, that's always pretty interesting. Sometimes that bedrock is actually got electrical currents going through it. It may have piezoelectric quartz. A quartz crystal is piezoelectric. So you may have, and when soil is wet and has minerals in it, metals, you've got electrical currents, electrical conductivity and resistivity in the soil, and then you're in a certain proximity to it. You may be in the second story of a building, you may be wearing insulative soles on your shoes, or you may be in direct contact with the electromagnetism of bedrock. And, you know, into a certain sense, it's like quartz crystal. In a certain sense, it's like vibrating at a certain frequency. It's carrying like seismic waves or whatever it might be. So that proximity to bedrock is always pretty interesting to me as well. And then you've got all the changes in elevation. You've got the features that are left behind as the glacier, you know, glacier is going to be carrying material. It's going to be doing the scouring. You know, you've got those waterfalls and the elevational differences and all the electrical changes that come with that. So, you know, you've got a really rich place. And each of those different kinds of places are going to stimulate, I would say, different parts of your energy body, different chakras, let's say. And waterfalls in particular are a real rich place full of frequencies. And you can change your positioning and orientation to the sound and get different kinds of fundamental notes in your in the sound and different frequencies in each year. So that's a beautiful thing. So you could hypothetically now create an itinerary where you travel around your location to different kinds of places, points, promontories, summits, to activate all your chakras.
Okay. And that, yeah, I mean, I've been traveling out to different spots all around the lake for years, but never with any real purpose like that. Like any, there was no real goal except I want to see what this feels like. I want to go here and, you know, just enjoy the space. And also just to go back a little bit, that area where all those pock marks are in the bottom of the lake, that's in the you know, the southern third of the lake, which is an area on the eastern shore of the lake is known as the Banana Belt. Now, Seneca Lake itself has a microclimate around it.
Yep.
Due to the warmth of the water, it never freezes. It's the lake is frozen over, I think, 3 or 4 times ever in history. It's always moving, very dynamic underwater movement all the time. It stays, I think, at a steady 36 degrees year round. So there's a microclimate around the lake, which makes it a world-class area for growing grapes. And there's all kinds of wineries here, but the Banana Belt has a little bit extra. It's because of its location, and because it's on the eastern side of the lake. When the sun is setting, when it's coming down in the western sky, when it hits that shore on the east lower part of the lake, it'll raise the temperature in that area 5 to 10 degrees, which is really it's almost like, I mean, you can experience different weather depending on where you are around Seneca Lake. I also just found it interesting that, you know, this Banana Belt area, there's also a lot of, weird stories, UFO sightings, orb sightings. Seneca Lake also has tons and tons of orb sightings. I could probably do a whole website and a book just on the orb sightings in this area alone.
Yeah.
But you know, this microclimate also can kind of, put you in a different sort of state of mind as well.
Well, it does. If you think all the way through, all the contributors to the electromagnetic field that we're experiencing, that we're immersed in, there's electrical ions in the air. And around those waterfalls, you're going to find an abundance of the negatively charged ions, which make you feel better. And in some places, you'll experience more preponderance of these positively charged ions in the air. And there's research to show that definitely contributes to people's ill health. So these subtle elements in our environment, whether they're electromagnetic or something else, these are subtly and profoundly influencing us. So as we move around our environment, we can be more aware, more conscious, more intentional. We can use these elements in our ceremonies, and we can use these places as places where we're intentionally perhaps practicing our psychic abilities.
Right. So to go back to what you were talking about, this energy line that runs between the two lakes, can you go into a little bit more detail on that? Like what are the other places? What is this line connected to other places? And
for sure, it goes down to the Bermuda Triangle and up to the native territory up there. And what I'd like to do is to invite your listeners to send me an email. My email address, I'll answer every email. When your listeners will email me at energy, ENERGY, at vortexmaps.com. Energy at vortexmaps.com. I'll send them a free ebook, and I'll include some of these maps that we've describing so that you can get a better sense of how those platonic solids inscribe into the earth. And when you go to vortexmaps.com, you can see that Earth Star Globe and the Earth Star North America, I've been describing. And if you can picture the Earth like a soccer ball sewn from these geometric patterns, you do find that the deep sea trenches tend to correspond with this geometry. The coastlines of continents tend to correspond with this global geometry. But that's not the only system of energy lines, those global lines. There are many more local type patterns of energy, which you may be able to recognize just in your own landscape. You've done a fair amount of mapping, and if you use your maps as a kind of a mandala, as a geometric pattern to meditate on, to gaze at, you may be even able to remote view into your map. That's one way of using your map as an alchemical tool. Some people are learning to douse their maps, dowsing maps as though they were on the landscape itself, and that's another kind of alchemical, magical way you can use maps.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, just a couple of things. Yeah, I encourage all my listeners to go to vortexmaps.com. What really struck me, Dan, when I went to your website is you have your phone number on there and you're just inviting everyone in the world, like, call me, give me a call, ask me any questions. You're very, very forthcoming and so enthusiastic about sharing what you know. And it's very refreshing. You weren't asking there, you know, there's, you know, you've got some mercantile interest. You've got a few books for sale, but it's just, hey, you got any questions? Give me a call. And I find that really, really refreshing and inspiring.
So, absolutely. Same offer for your listeners there. If you go to vortexmaps.com, my phone number's at the top. Give me a call. I'll respond to all calls. So there's nothing I'd rather do than talk about the science behind Earth magic, let's say. Mm-hmm. And just to give my elevator pitch, if you'll allow me.
Absolutely.
I like to say there's an infinite amount of energy available everywhere, all the time, for our physical healing, for our psychic opening, and for harmonizing the planet.
Okay. Yep. I love that. And just so my listeners know as well, I sent you a link to a Google map that I've been putting together for the past few years. That's actually a sort of an edited one. I have one with many more piece of information, but it's basically, I took the Seneca Lake area and I've put points and mapped out where there were UFO sightings and, you know, some of the higher peaks and all the waterfalls and all of these, special or unique points and spots around the lake that I've learned about over the past, you know, 5-10 years. And I'm gonna make sure that I keep revisiting this map and seeing what and meditating on it and seeing what comes out, because I've just had this all through this, you know, process of, you know, gathering the stories to putting up the website. There's always this this motivation underneath it all, where I want to know why. I want to know what it means and if it means something, because I'm past the point of considering whether this is a place where very unusual or unexplained or paranormal or whatever you want to call it. It's a very special place, and I know that it's different than anywhere else in the world, and it has these special properties. And I love the idea of just trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together and seeing how it can I guess enhance my life, enhance other people's lives, and make even from the just basic standpoint of people who live around here, just having a more of an appreciation and a different type of appreciation for where they are and where they live. Because, you know, you talk about us, we're always surrounded by and swimming in these energies, and these energies are even part of us. And it's so easy to go through life and not stop for a moment and wonder about that and realize that there's so much more going on than what's right in front of our eyes. And yeah, can you, you mentioned a little bit about, you know, visiting sites and activating your chakras. Is there any more you can sort of recommend or suggest or talk about, you know, ways to, acknowledge and celebrate these places, these energies and how that might, how that can heal us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, many of us are going to visit these places because of their natural beauty. And we're going there with joy, and we're going there and we're being restored. And we may not be going about it in this same kind of self-conscious way as I am about, oh, okay, there's these subtle energies here. But people on some level, consciously or unconsciously, we're drawn to these energetic places. And we can go there even more in the spirit of pilgrimage. We are preparing to go. We're being mindful. We're maybe choosing certain austerities. We're going to give up sugar in the days leading up, or give up alcohol, or whatever might be austerities in preparation for the journey. Mm-hmm. We're deciding what to leave behind, what to take with us as we go. There's hardships along the way of any pilgrimage. We come to certain thresholds. Often the inner sanctum is beyond a third threshold, so we're going to recognize and acknowledge thresholds along the way. We're going to recognize that we're on sacred ground. We might take off our shoes if that's appropriate. We're going to leave no trace, maybe bring a garbage sack and take some trash out with us if mm-hmm. we can. We're going to be there in joy and gratitude and just as present as we can be, maybe conduct some kind of ceremony, maybe leave some kind of an offering. That might be a flower or some seeds, something of that nature, something that's not going to impose on the place. And we may sanctify the place. There's an energy of the place itself, and then there's an overlay of consciousness very often. And the places that we're talking about, these energetic places, they're often what I like to call islands of infinity. There's very little human consciousness overlay there. The veil between worlds is thin. And there's this experience that it's totally connected to every other place. that you're not separate from the place. That you're breathing the air of the place. That you're maybe drinking some water from the place, or eating some wild food if it's in abundance. You're taking something of that place with you when you go energetically, and you're returning home, and you're bringing home the boon, the gift of having visited that place. And then finally, that you don't have to go to some exotic place, that same possibility and infinite energy is available to you right where you are all the time.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up here. Dan, thank you so much for offering to be on the podcast, for being on the podcast, mm-hmm. for sharing all your knowledge and your wisdom. And this is great. I'm going to be thinking about this for a while. And why don't you, if you can, just remind my listeners one more time where they can find you and all that.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. Again, there's nothing else I'd rather do than talk about the science behind Earth magic. And people can reach me through my website, which is Vortex maps.com, and I will answer every inquiry. So thank you very much. Thanks for what you're doing.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Well, that's it for this time around. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks so much for listening. And if you have any thoughts on any of the topics in this episode, please let me know. And remember to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And get over to SenecaLakeMysteries.com and subscribe to the email list so you don't miss anything. A new podcast comes out every month on the 7s. I'll talk to you then.